SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half. Twin Spires weekend preview. And with that in mind, actually, let's see what, let's pull up the old Twin Spires and get ready to talk to James and see what is happening at the platform. Maybe hear some tales of Breeders' Cup glory, because I didn't, you know, when James and Ed visited, I did not get a chance to record everything, and I didn't talk to James afterwards. So we'll see what how everybody did. James Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hope I was had a just, good time out in California.
We certainly did. I mean, it was a terrific cup. Every time you get out there, because it's so different. It's just the setting, and there's a lot about it that is really enjoyable. So,
yeah, and I thought that I agree 100%. I thought the racing was great both days. I think the Breeders' Cups are, really measured by the classic in retrospect. And I thought Sierra Leone ran a huge race. I thought Fierceness ran real well. I thought even Forever Young ran big, given his trip. I didn't like the trip he got from the rail. And I thought the winner got a big number, and it was a fast race. And so I thought there was a lot to take away from that. And I think the fact that Pletcher said afterwards, and I know this could change, but he said afterward, Fierceness, the plan is to run him next year. And they sort of hinted the same thing about Sierra Leone, and Torpedo Anna looks like it's going to target big races. It's exciting for next year to have a potentially a much stronger handicap division than we've seen, at least depth-wise, in recent years.
Well, exactly. For all the carrying on about retirements, to have some of the top, literally the top 3-year-olds, knowing that they're all going to be back, and then you fold in Mystic Dan. There's a lot to anticipate. Definitely. What before we talk about the weekend, I did not with you and Ed, did not get a chance to write down everybody's biggest pushes. How'd your weekend go?
Yeah, it went okay. I was a little disappointed because really some of my best, strongest opinions were on the second half of the day, Saturday, and I didn't really push them, but definitely cash some tickets because, I picked Straight No Chaser and Moira, and I definitely played, I'd mentioned on the show with Ed Sullivan Angel in that Philly Mare Sprint and had her, and, was upset because I'd sort of leveraged into some doubles of pick threes as well as playing her and playing an exacto with the society. But definitely cash some tickets. And I tell you, one thing that I talked about last Thursday, and I thought Ed sort of echoed it as well, just looking at the 2017 Breeders' Cup, 2017 and 2021 Breeders' Cups at Del Mar, that these turf routes, even the dirt routes, just having full fields, just played, I thought, differently than the races day in and day out during the summer and fall meets at Del Mar, where people are looking at these post position stats and seeing that these inside posts are real big edge. Barring a horse having tactical speed or just sort of laying over the field like Lake Victoria, it was tough to win from the inside, I thought. I thought an argument could be made both in routes. This is strictly routes. On both the turf and dirt, that the middle to outside pass were best. And, you can just look at even undercard races, too. On Friday, two of the three turf routes were won by horses that were drawn in post 10 and out. And on Saturday, four of the five were won by horses that were drawn post 10 and out. And I thought that if Rebel's Romance had been drawn in post 1 and Rouseland Park had been drawn in post 11, that race, you know, might have, I didn't think Rouseland Park had a good trip. I didn't think Cinderella's Dream, you flip-flop her post with Moira, would have been interesting to see what happened because I didn't think she had the best of trips. And as far as Trevor Young, I think they were worried about that break and they were intent on hustling him, and he was too eager early. And there was a point in the first turn where Taki wasn't really riding him aggressively, and I thought he got sort of checked a little bit, shuffled back, and then when they were going in the far turn, he had to sort of come under a ride to hold his position buried down on the rail. Didn't look comfortable to me, and he got out late and just came flying. I would have liked to have seen how he would have run if drawn outside, because I just think, you know, it just wasn't a clean journey for him. He might not have been best, but, you know, it would have been interesting at least to see.
And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you fleshed that out, because particularly the wide posts, and when Hammer's on later, he has for years told people, don't, especially on this weekend, don't discount your horse if just because they're outposted. And
Henry Matisse, I think if he had had to work out a trip from the inside from off the pace, you know, who knows. I mean, we just saw it. I mean, Tis Quantum, I thought being drawn outside, being able to make his own trip, helped him at 26-1. He was drawn widest of all. He was number 14 on the program. You know, we saw big exactas on other undercard races on Friday where they were coming in like 10-13 and paying like $200 for a dollar. So I just thought that, you know, I mean, if you're going to be forwardly placed from the inside, it's not as much of a concern. But as far as stalkers and late runners go, that's something to remember for next year when we're back at Del Mar.
100%. Well, before we talk about some spots, James, take a look what we've got ahead on the platform, and I'm just looking. We got Hit It and Split It. We've got the tournament bankroll cashbacks. We've got you know, there's an interesting promotion I got to mention because I know the players love accruing points and using it, you know, using them in different ways. On Tuesdays, 10 times your points on whatever track you wager most, and maybe it's Indy, maybe it's Parks, whatever. Tuesday, 10 times reward points on all wagers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think that $3,000 pick three daily giveaway at Churchill, I mean, I'm definitely pursuing that. You know, I just want to mention as well, you know, through TwinSpires on our app, you know, we've got a bet share component. We pushed that some during the Breeders' Cup and had good results. That's a way to, like, share bets easily with people where you don't have to exchange money. It just comes out of their accounts. Check that out. And then, you know, we're in the live tournament handicapping contest game. And go to that tournaments tab at TwinSpires. We have got, you know, over the next few days, tournaments for as little as $75 to enter, up to $400. And we even have a, you know, we've got some big some feeders for some big qualifiers as well. So go to that tournament site. You can check out the details and schedules if you're interested in playing handicapping contests.
Well, let's dive in. Where are we going this weekend?
All right, well, I'm going to start at Woodbine. Because I spent a little time looking at those stakes.
Right?
Good
sequence.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good sequence. My strongest opinion in the three consecutive stakes will come in that first one. I like this Millie Girl, Steve. I think that this number two in race seven, I think that some of the morning line favorites are vulnerable in this race. She won this race from off the pace last year, closed from like 10th, more than double digits, back to win. But I just like the fact that this six-year-old mare has been showing improved tactical speed in her recent efforts for Catherine Day Phillips. And, you know, I'm going to play her to win at anything near 8-1 and even keyer in some vertical exotics, because I do think number five fashionably would be fashionably fab, and who's the morning line favorite, is potentially vulnerable in there. I wasn't too keen on that Queen Regent, and, you know, I do respect Caitlin, her greatness, but that Millie Girl's a play for me in the Maple Leaf Stakes at Woodbine tomorrow. Turn into race eight. That's a 7 furlong Bessarabian Stakes, grade three.
Bessarabian.
Bessarabian. And I mean, listen, I got some questions in here as well on the morning line favorites. Number six, Gallon of Rush. I didn't like her effort to I just wonder if she was in a little better form that summer. Number 10, Love the Shop, is coming off 3 straight seconds. And even number 14's Storm Miami has never won from 5 starts so far in the U.S. She had run in a Clayman race in her last race in Ireland. So I looked at number 3, Stormcast, is 12-1 on the morning line with Rafael Hernandez for Mike Cassidy. I like to cut back to 7 furlongs. I thought that was a big effort to back. Didn't beat maybe the toughest field in that Bison City, but looked good doing it. And he's dangerous on the front end. And then number 7, Sunday Shoes, I think 7 furlongs is a good fit. And this filly is eligible to show up with a big effort for Wesley Ward. So I got 3-7 in the Bessarabian.
Love to Shop is okay in there, isn't it? Isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's definitely a filly that you know, last time I was a little disappointed that she didn't like seal the deal against that A game, who was 46-1. Just shown a little bit of a tendency to, you know, hang in second in both these return efforts and ran second in this race last year. But she could, you know, definitely respect Kevin Addard, and you know, she's a contender in there.
I want to mention one other horse as well, going back for a second to the Maple Leaf. 15-1 on Blueberry Fields for Brandon Greer, and coming out of that Matron. And
absolutely. And she had a troubled trip. I'm not too keen on that Matron. A lot, some of those horses out of there, including the top two, I'm going to play against. But I am going to use Blueberry Fields because, I mean, that start completely compromised her chances. And she's going good right now for Brandon Greer.
Yeah, I didn't want that to get away from us because that's a nice number.
Yeah, and then in the Autumn Stakes, once again a race where, you know, I look at Paramount Prince. I mean, going to have to deal with some speed in here, and you know, I thought number 11 Dresden Rogue takes some action. Definitely going good, but I think 9 furlongs is the question for him. And Forever Super will be making his first start at Woodbine. But, you know, definitely a nice horse. The horse I was intrigued by, Steve, is number 1, Artie Storm. I think distance is the issue, but I think this gelding really runs his best races from inside post. I thought he got a good draw in here. He's coming off a really nice effort, I thought, in allowance. And, you know, even his effort, that was his first effort of the year, so he continues to progress upon that. I thought he had a chance in there. And the other one I took a long look at is number 15, Bayless Al, who runs well on synthetics and has really shown a good closing kick. He's stepping up big time for Addard in here. But those last two efforts are encouraging.
You know, just Ron Gierking couldn't join us, but I just was pulling up Ron's picks. He actually picked Blueberry Fields in the 7th, Love to Shop in the 8th, and Paramount Prince in the Autumn in the 9th. This is a very good sequence.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, that Never Surprise is going to add speed, but I even think that you know, just the way that La Macaza has run last time, I think she's eligible to be, or he's eligible to be hustling. So I'm hoping there's a really solid, you know, some pace in there. Because Paramount Prince, yeah, I mean, he's definitely, you know, he won the Queen's Plate by 5 lengths last year, or King's Plate, and so, or by open lengths last year. So he's definitely always dangerous, but he is coming off a disappointing effort in that Durham Cup.
Well, Forever Super is going to have to figure figure out a trip. Dresden Row, that race two back would be a good fit. I think Artie Storm down inside, second off the layoff, and it was a layoff of almost a year. At 10-1, Artie Storm deserves a long look.
Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, I went through his form a little bit, and he's like, you know, you look at his, like when he was in this effort back 2 years, this race 2 years ago, he drew post 10, and that just doomed any chance he had. He wants to be in there. He's going to be stalking, like, in mid-pack and definitely in with a chance. He hadn't won at a mile and an eighth distance, but he's run second and third at two attempts. So, definitely in with a chance.
I'm with you. The for those that haven't looked at the Woodbine at all, the pick five starts with a three-quarter second-level allowance as the sixth, and the nightcap is a first-level allowance going 6.5. This is a really terrific sequence, and well, maybe this is probably the best. I think it's safe to say, right? This is the best sequence maybe anywhere in North America.
The fall racing is great at Woodbine. There's a bunch of horses that aren't going south the race in the winter, and they like empty the barns out so this is, you know, in the fall. So, yeah, got the big fields there, good racing tomorrow up north. I'll give a couple other opinions. I'll just say that at Aqueduct and the Red Smith, I do like Masterpiece. I think that horse just really going good at age 8 for Dutroux. That was a good third last time. Cabo Spirit stole that race on the front end, but Masterpiece loves Aqueduct, and I'm going to key him in some multi-race bets and hope to maybe get a little bit of value around him. And at Churchill Downs, I want to point out that in race 5, number 5, Final Gambit, might not be much of a price, but I would keep my eyes on him. This Brad Cox, I mean, I know he won with Immersive, but, he's had good cheer. He had Stunner. Just Stunner winning that Tempest Stakes by 3-plus lengths makes you just think about that Senza Parole, because, I mean, she just drilled that filly, and that filly has come back and won her last two races by open lengths and is a promising 2-year-old filly for Cox. So, he had a Not This Time colt called Disco Time that was a Judmont homebred that won going 7 furlongs on the main track Friday. It's a favorite by 3-plus lengths. And then he's got another Judmont homebred here in Final Gambit. I don't know how many 2-year-old wins Cox has this year, but he's absolutely loaded with these juveniles. So I just wanted to point out this horse is by out of a Tappet mare that was a multiple winner on turf and is a half-sister to Group 1 French winner Announce. So a classy female turf family and some decent works. In race number 8, I'll give two more horses real quick. Race number 7 is a mile and an eighth allowance.
Yeah.
There's some deep closers in this race, including Kinetic. I like Baton Rouge in there and even Parchment Road. I mean, Parchment Road just came back with a dull effort. I'm not trusting his form. I'm not playing him at short odds until he runs a decent race. I thought Baton Rouge, you know, last time out, I thought that track was playing a little bit like, I mean, they'd really tried to slow it down. Keeneland did. That horse serviced the air, broke slowly and rallied from way off the pace. But this Baton Rouge ran well at Churchill Downs, I thought, in the past. And I just think he's going to get a good trip for Hartman on the front end with Bayerano, like the 4 in race 7. And then in the River City, which is the feature, I mean, Battle Normandy, I think he's going to be tough in there. I liked his win 2 back over Truly Quality, who won the Colonial Cup and the Grade 3 Singspiel in his next start. And I thought that was a solid allowance win last time at Aqueduct. I'm going to give him the edge in there for Shug. And I'll mention Master of Foxhounds. I don't know if he's going to be 12-1 for D'Amato, but that horse has some tactical ability and could be him with a little bit of a chance as well.
Nice. So Battle of Normandy, the 8, 6-1 for Shug with Luan Machado, and Master of Foxhounds, the 5. And Baton Rouge is the 4. In that seventh, and Final Gambit, the five in the fifth, the two-year-old maiden group. Okay.
I'm going to try to get out with a winner on the last second Friday push. Number one, Clear Conscious in race six at Aqueduct today. I think this race is going to set up well for this gelding. And let me say, Chris Englehart takes over conditioning, and he is winning at a near 30% clip from his last 63 starts with horses joining his barn. So Clear Conscious gets out red, listed at 9-2 on the morning line, loves the mile and a 16th distance, and I look for a big effort at race six today at Aqueduct.
All right, the LSFP, and it's funny, you bring up the Englehart patriarch and Chris. He had a very quiet middle part of the year. I mean, he's too good of a trainer to.
This is his first start of the, I mean, he hasn't been running a lot of horses,
no.
In New York at all. Yeah. I mean, at Naira tracks at all this, here in a while.
Should actually, I wonder, I'm glad this came up. The one in the sixth today, the LSFP. Before you go, too, I didn't get a chance to reach out to KK. We did last week. We did do the advance on the first of the Derby future wager pools. Did you take part?
You know, I'm a big fan of Pool 2 over the Thanksgiving Day weekend. I've talked about it. I like to give, like $10 win tickets out as, like, gifts, stocking stuff and stuffers. And I focus more on Pool 2. So I'll be all in on that later this month.
All right. Well, for those earlier in the week, if you didn't hear me give it a little bit of a rundown, the All Others, of course, was number one, 4-5. The shortest price of the individual interests, Chancer McPatrick, 9-1, East Avenue, 11-1, and of course this was closed before the juvenile went off. Jonathan's Way, 19-1, Serenity, 23-1 for Mott, Ferocious, 25-1, Gaming, 26-1. Your juvenile winner, people got Citizen Bull at 29-1. The unnamed All-American Dream Colt by Into Mischief. I asked Baffert about it. They're working on a name, and he says that the horse is getting there. It's coming along, and they're excited. 39-1. It was interesting that they included him.
Citizen Bull completely took advantage of that. East Avenue kept missing a break. He even broke out right a little bit. Citizen Bull did it right at the when the gates opened. But that was a big effort. I mean, the one race, poor race he ran, he was like pretty far off the pace in that setback. He doesn't have to be on the lead in his upcoming races, but he's going to be prominent. And I like that race by him. It would have been nice to see what would have happened with the other horse getting a fair chance. But I still thought Citizen Bull was impressive.
A couple of other horses that should be noted in here. How about Chad's Key Waden, who was coming out of those key races from Saratoga? Key Waden, 170-1, and a nice number. And then Hill Road, third in the juvenile, and the only horse to close at all is Staying in America, is going to Delgado in South Florida. You can watch for him there. The longest shot on the board, Hill Road, 276-1.
Yeah.
I love it. James?
Who's he going to in America?
Delgado, George Delgado, not Gustavo, the nephew.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, thanks, Steve. You have a great weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
James, thanks for everything. Great job last week, including Straight No Chaser. I'm going to get Dave Hill in here. We're into hour three, and Nick Tamaro will he's perfect for the last segment. So we've got basically 45 minutes. We got Dave Hill and Hammer to come in ahead. Perfect. So let's get Dave, and I'm very anxious to talk a little NFL too, and also how Dave's Breeders' Cup went, because he had Was he? He didn't get taken in by City of Troy, did he? Sometimes I'm able to write everything down. Some years it slips through the cracks, and this was one of those years, as it happens. So let's get Dave, and we'll get a hybrid conversation. And let me also pull out this week's NFL odds. And there's Dave Hill. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're crystal clear. I'm gonna give everybody a little NFL push. Not a side or anything. It's a website, 506sports.com. You know about this, Dave?
I don't know. It sounds familiar, but it's not what I look at.
506, pull it up, 506sports.com. For those of you, especially if you live in a market where you get, you get certain games foisted on you, what it is essentially the TV broadcast formats, and it shows you maps. By Wednesday each week, it shows you the maps of where each game is going to be broadcast, what market. And it's awesome. I've forgotten you've been on 3 years doing this, and I have forgotten in each of those years until now to bring this up. 506sports.com. People will, I think, appreciate this.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I used to be a Sunday Ticket Red Zone subscriber. Now I just watch illegal bootleg streams. on the internet of games. I got tired of paying them. They just keep raising the price on me, and I just couldn't take it anymore.
I love that. They also have college football and more, but it's the NFL is the only thing I look at for them. But it's a terrific resource. And so, like, for instance, we're going into the city tomorrow to see the new Louis Armstrong musical, which is opening Monday. My brother's the press agent. Louis Armstrong, Wonderful World. And it's actually at Studio 54, which I didn't even realize is being used
the
as a...
Now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. So tomorrow happens to be critic previews, and so my brother got us tickets. And then on Sunday, we're going to want to watch the Eagle-Dallas game. And I knew we were in trouble right away because the Jets are playing Arizona, and for whatever reason, I mean, we're stuck with the Jets. And so the entire country is going to have the Eagles and Cowboys, and there's like two little buttons on the map, New York and Dallas, and everybody, New York and Arizona, Phoenix. Everybody else gets the – so she and I are going to have to go find a place to watch the Eagle game. It's very annoying.
It shouldn't be too hard to find a spot. There's plenty of Eagles fans in New York. You know, in Manhattan has, like, a bar for every sport team,
yes,
college,
yes,
and pro. So you just got to find on Reddit what the right watering hole is for all of you sicko Eagles fans out there.
Well, and sicko is the right word. I don't like watching – the birds in public settings.
yeah, you don't like being among your people.
I mean, it's one thing to be in the stadium where we can all either celebrate or commiserate together, but I don't like being in a bar or restaurant. It's not my preferred viewing scenario.
Yeah, I understand. I'm a little bit like that myself, because sometimes when I'm watching certain games, I might, act a little out of pocket and don't need to necessarily be in public. But if I'm in a sports book, nobody cares. The great thing about watching a game in a sports book is that
that's true.
All manner of behavior is on display and no judgment.
That's very true, actually. Before we talk NFL, let's get your Breeders' Cup postscript. How'd you make out?
Not so great. I left some money there. I think I gave out my pick on your show for the Classic, and by the time the Classic rolled around, I was stuck, so I decided I would get even, especially since I got such a good price. But didn't happen for me. But it was a great race, and very impressive prop we have this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, the three-year-olds, and I loved, you know, I loved what Andy Beyer said on Monday, which was it reinforces the recommendation not to draw conclusions about the three-year-olds in the spring. It's just it's just a narrow-minded approach, you know, to horses that are going to get better and as the year goes on, and especially with the pedigrees. I mean, here's a horse who's by, let's say, Sierra Leone, you know, who people had given up on, and he's by a horse who only really got good, you know, as he approached his four-year-old year, and then, you know, as an older horse.
I've just conditioned myself recently to think about three-year-olds in the Classic and in other handicap races to be, you know, I've conditioned myself to sort of advantage the older horses against the three-year-olds, and I guess that's just because of recent results that I've decided, you know, that I've conditioned myself to think that way. But it hurt me this year.
Yeah, I'm happy for the. I mean, I didn't actively. At no point was I actively against Sierra Leone. But I'm happy for the players who, you know, who identified with him during the Triple Crown season and you know, kept trying and you know, believed that he would get the right scenario and, you know, be in position to take advantage of it. And that's what happened. The Forever Young fans, they got Sierra Leone'd, literally and figuratively. I mean, he was too close to the pace. If he had had, you know, if he had taken, you know, I understand being on the rail, he had to gain some early position. I get that. Sakai had no choice. But at the same time, you didn't, once you had position, you could have found some place to set up shop and you know, let the speeds go and then come with that run. And that's, you know, that was the difference maker when it came to Pratt and how he approached it. There it is.
Another year in the books. Del Mar looked great, and I was jealous watching. I mean,
yeah, it's great. It is great there.
I haven't been there in so long, and such a great track.
Well, they haven't moved the ocean.
The ocean hasn't moved them.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there may be some beach erosion, I suppose, but it'll be there when you're ready to go back.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's hope that you're right about that. From your lips to God's ears, as they say.
Well, let's turn our attention, and before we look at Sunday, I had to start the show because it's funny. I was sort of in and out of consciousness last night, and I woke up at a certain point. The game was approaching the end, and it was pretty tough to not watch because it was exciting. And it was, you know, back in the fourth quarter, it was back and forth. I couldn't help but talk about, you know, only in racing, Dave, where people complain about the stewarding and bad calls or no calls. I guess stewards have moved from our stands, you know, into zebra stripes because that was an embarrassment.
This is all of sports, though, all of sports. But I would say that it's probably worse in the NFL than any other sport, because I think the NFL has to have more rules than any other sport on earth. It has to be the most confusing, you know, just so many new rules, and they add new ones every year, and they change some of the existing rules. I mean, it is like government, you know, I mean, it's the most bureaucratic sport in the world, I think. So I think the NFL suffers from this more than any other sport, probably.
How do you miss three separate penalties on one play?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. But if I was sort of, you know, just a sort of like Friday morning, you know, quarterback, the refs here, it's totally conceivable that once Cincinnati decides to go for two there, right, and say, okay, all or nothing play for the winner of the law, it's such a high-stakes play at that point that you have to imagine that the refs probably think we have to let them play. Right, we can't decide the game with a call. The problem is that then you decide the game with a no call, right? But then, you know, so the psychology has to be, well, unless it's egregious enough, we're going to have to let it go. You know, that happens. I think we instill that in refs in all sports by constantly complaining that the refs get too involved in the decision points in games, and nobody likes a game that gets decided on a penalty. Nobody in any sport, nobody likes that. But the problem is that the no call becomes just the inverse of deciding a game on a penalty. So it's tough. And, you know, this is one of those rare occasions where you'll hear me express some sympathy for a referee in a professional sport. But I do think that if that play was not Cincinnati going for two in such a high-stakes situation, but maybe was, you know, the play right before it, you know, the play for the touchdown, maybe you see them make the call. But, you know, Cincinnati kicks the field goal, we go to overtime, and maybe the game gets ripped fairly. But I agree, those were egregious, but not egregious enough for the refs to decide to, you know, put the flag out there and decide the game.
So, let me also fold in, because you and I texted a little bit last night. There was that one drive that the Bengals had where they got the third and two and then fourth and two, and they threw deep twice when they had valve, underneath valve plays to Brown for first downs like three times on the drive, and they're throwing 30-yard. I mean, what was that?
That's Cincinnati football.
I mean, that was preposterous. I saw Chris Long blasted him for that. I saw. I love Chris. Somebody should put. If you want to have one of those commentary shows, like the Manning cast, put Chris Long on. He's sharp as a tack.
I mean, the Ravens scored what, three touchdowns in the fourth quarter? It's kind of incredible the way that the Ravens just turn it on when they need to. This is why the Ravens can't cover, right? And this is why, once again, you know, I had a small bet on the Ravens minus. 5.5 last night, and I thought that number should have covered, but it didn't, because the Ravens are really good at getting wins. They're good at putting up the amount of points they need to win and nothing more. And when they have big leads, they're really good at letting other teams get back in the game, you know? So it's just so maddening. That's why I was really rooting for Cincinnati to win the game last night at the end, because there was, at that point, there's no way to cover. Right, and so once they decide to go for two and there's no way to cover, then hell, just let the Bengals win. Just because I'm petty and spiteful, but
well, that maybe it's good that we didn't talk yesterday and that we were.
Yeah, I didn't have a huge. I didn't have a big handicap here. I just made a small bet just for fun, because if I'm watching a primetime game, I'm going to bet on it. But it wasn't a big bet because I didn't have a strong opinion about that game. I wouldn't have given it out anyway.
All right. Well, then, what are we giving out?
Well, you know, last week we went 2 for 2, so we lost some juice. But the favorites did well last week, and they did well. There weren't a lot of underdog upsets, but there were a lot of favorites, like last night's game, that didn't cover. This week we're playing some underdogs. And I also played another teaser this week with some favorites in it. So there's at least one game I'm hoping to middle here between the teaser and the side. The first game that I like a lot is I like the Steelers against the Commanders. And I got a three. I got +3 -115, which I think there might still be in market. It's 2.5 at a lot of shops.
That's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
2.5 +100, 2.5. You know, +102, those 2.5 +100 are pretty equivalent, pretty close, but the +3 -115, I think, is what you want to get here if you want to play the Steelers. They're playing the Commanders, and this is, I think, maybe the most interesting game of the week, in my opinion, because these are two teams that are doing really well, and much better than anybody expected from either of these teams. And there's been some chatter about how they've both been playing weak opponents. And, you know, they're maybe both fugazi. So now they play each other, and I think this is going to be a really interesting test for both teams. You know, the power ratings I use prefer. I think the Steelers are better in this spot, getting 3 points. And you know, I think that this is a game where it's like we have an offense that has really outperformed expectation with the Commies, and then we've got the Steelers' defense, which has been as strong as I think, maybe stronger than people even thought that it would be coming into the season. So I think it'll be an interesting matchup. I've got the Commanders maybe half a point better in this game with home field advantage. So I like the 3 points. And I think that Russell Wilson has really been, you know, this season a really strong quarterback. I mean, his stats are all great. I mean, he's a top 10 quarterback in so many quarterback statistical categories that it's really been interesting to watch. So that said, Jaden Daniels is maybe one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. So, you know, yeah. don't want to take anything away from him, but I really think that Jaden Daniels is the offense and has really, you know, been such a major part of what's made Washington successful here. Their defense has just been a complete sieve. And, you know, I think that this is going to be an interesting matchup. I wouldn't be surprised no matter what happens. If one side or the other wins in a blowout, you know, double overtime, I wouldn't be surprised either way. But I do think that, you know, the power rating is like Pittsburgh, and I think there's some extra value there with the half a point difference to take the 3 points on the road here with Pittsburgh. So I made a bet on that game.
Very good. Three, though. Might be a little tricky to get to find the three.
I see a three right now at BetMGM minus okay. 115. So that's if you've got BetMGM, that's where you can find it this morning. 2.5 is okay. You know, I'd still bet 2.5, but you want the three obviously because it's a key number. But you know, the fact that the number's moving in Pittsburgh's direction is a sign of sharp. You know, that I mean, this late in the week, the money that comes in is going to be bigger bets. You know, so those half point line movements late in the week, I think there's real signal in that, and it makes me feel good to know that the number's probably moving in that direction. If it goes from 2.5 plus 100 to 2.5, you know, minus 105 or something like that, that's a good sign too.
All right, 1 o'clock.
I like this is maybe my favorite game of the week. I like Tennessee at plus 7.5 against the Chargers. And I think that is a widely available number right now, but there are books showing some juiced minus sevens. These are, I think, this is another really interesting matchup in that the both of these teams have really leaned heavily on their defenses this season. The Chargers' defenses, you know, the Chargers have been more successful than the Titans, but two really strong, proven, you know, effective defenses this season. And, you know, the Chargers were running the ball well early in the season. Now they can't run the ball at all. They've been depending a lot on the pass, and Tennessee's been really good pass rushing defense. This is the lowest total on the board this week, or one of the lowest, if not the lowest totals on the board. And I just think that it's going to be a low-scoring game. It's going to be a tough grind in the trenches, and I think that in those kinds of situations, giving me 7 and a hook, I'll take it, right? I think if this is going to be a low-scoring game, a really defensive-dominated game, I'll take the points.
That's a good point.
Really,
38, right? 38 is the total.
Yeah. So there's obviously some sense that this is that the defenses here are both, you know, loaded for bear, and the Chargers. You know, the thing that could blow up that total is that the Chargers are going to have to rely on explosive plays. They're going to have to rely on the pass. It's going to be hard to run on the Titans. The Titans are going to put the pass rush on them pretty hard, and that's going to be, you know, a high volatility situation where if the Chargers connect with some big passes, they may break off some big plays. And I don't think the Titans had the same ability to do that, so that could advantage the Chargers. but will it advantage them to the place to the point that they can, you know, win by margin with such a low total game? I like Tennessee here plus 7.5. But I'm also taking the same. I'm taking the Chargers in my teaser. So this is the game that I'm kind of hoping to hit a middle where maybe I can get, you know, the number fall somewhere between 1.5 and 7.5, and we can win both sides of this.
All right, we'll get to the teaser. What other sides we got?
I like the Cardinals against the Jets. The Cardinals are at home. They're getting 1 point at home. And, you know, that number seems like it's moving against me today. It looks like some shops have moved to 1.5, so I don't feel great about that. But I was able to pick them up at plus 1. And, look, this is a game that, you know, the Cardinals' defense has not been great, and this might be a great spot for the Jets to exploit a weak defense. But I also think that the Cardinals have been undervalued in the market all season long. They've done well against the spread all season long. They have performed above market expectation all season long. And I think that the Cardinals being at home, playing really well right now, you know, playing some of the best football they played. And, you know, there's some people that say, well, the Cardinals' wins have all been fluky. You know, they beat the Niners when the Niners couldn't kick. Which, incidentally, will probably be the situation this week since the Jets clearly can't seem to kick either. The Cardinals are winning. You know, they're sneaking up and winning these sort of strange games because of turnovers, et cetera. All that may be true, but that's football is what I would say, and I think the Jets are just as capable of missing lots of field goals or turning the ball over as any other opponent the Cardinals have faced. So I think this is a situation where the Jets are overvalued in the market and the Cardinals are undervalued. And so I like the Cardinals getting the point at home. The power ratings, I think, support that that's a good bet, even if the market is against me right here. You know, I'm prepared to be wrong, but, I you know, this is just, to me, this feels right. It feels like this is a spot to play against teams that I think are at the wrong end of their valuation. I think the Jets are as high as you're going to find them all season probably right now. And the Cardinals are as low as you're going to find them, because even if the Cardinals lose this game, they have a pretty easy schedule moving forward, and I think they could string some wins together. And they're doing really well in their division, so I think the Cardinals are going to position themselves really well late in the season for the market to catch up to them. And I think the Jets will head in the other direction. So this is a strange spot where you're catching the Jets at what might be the height of their value, and the Cardinals at the low point, and that's where I want to play the Cardinals. And it's where I want to play against the Jets. So I like this spot, even though, again, you know. And if James Conner's injured and he doesn't play, I think that really impacts the Cardinals as well, because he's responsible for a lot of their explosive plays, is their rushing, is Conner's ability to rush. So if he's hurt, that could impact this too. So if you don't want to bet it today, you can watch and see. But I think if it comes out that he's not going to play, that's going to affect the number you get as well.
All right. So, Arizona, Tennessee, and Pittsburgh so far?
Yeah, and there's one other dog I'm taking this week, and that's the Pats against the Bears. And, you know, I would not wish any of my worst enemies to have to watch this game this week. It may not be a good one to watch, but I did bet some money on it. I bet on the Patriots plus 6. You know, I think the power rating supports this. I think that there's some real interesting. I think there's some interesting stuff going on with the Bears and their locker room drama, and whether or not this is a team that's quitting and giving up at this point, and you know what's happening behind the scenes there. But it's just not a team that seems like they're having a good time this season so far. And the Pats, I think, see real promise in Drake May. I think that they believe that they still believe they can turn their season around. They're getting 6 points, which just feels like a lot of points to me to get, even on the road against the Bears, against this Bears team. So, let me see. I've got the game lined up at, where is it? Chicago is, I've got New England. Sorry, I'm just looking for it. I've got Chicago winning this game by 4 points. So I really like getting 6. I don't know where the market is this morning. I hope that it's not at 6.5 and moving against me, but it might be. But I just felt at the time that there seemed like a lot of value here with me making the game 4 and with the sort of wackiness going on with Chicago. So I played four dogs this week. The Massey Peabody ratings show a lot of value across the board on a lot of games, but there's also a lot of interesting injury stuff that caused me to stay away from some games, like Jacksonville, where Trevor Lawrence isn't going to play, or in San Francisco, Tampa Bay, where Massey Peabody really liked the Bucs a lot this week. But we've got Christian McCaffrey coming back and some real unknowns that the power ratings don't really have factored in. Same with the Saints, which Massey Peabody continues to like week after week, which I laid off of that game too because the Saints are dealing with a lot of bad injuries as well. The one game that I decided not to bet that I didn't understand why, so Massey Peabody really likes the Panthers in the Germany game Sunday morning. I just stayed away from it because I just can't see myself. I feel like that's the kind of game where whichever side you bet, if you lose, you're just going to hate yourself because you're going to think, why did I bet the Panthers? Or you're going to think, why did I lay 6.5 points with the Giants? So I'd rather not be in that position. So I didn't bet that one.
Exactly. You want to start your day that way? Why would you?
Right. Like, you know, that we have the option to not bet a game. So
it's very true.
I exercise that option. The teaser, I've got Kansas City -1.5, the Chargers -1.5, and Philly -1. So three favorites that I'm teasing down 6 points. And I bet this at, you know, I bet this at DraftKings. DraftKings, you get +160 on that three-team teaser, and you'll get -120 on all the two-team combinations of that teaser. And there's a lot of value at those prices, and DraftKings has those numbers right now. You know, I'm limited now to bet to $6 on teasers at DraftKings. So I've got all those for $6. You know, I had to reach out to some friends and give them this teaser who can bet more at DraftKings. Hopefully I don't get them limited. But if you have DraftKings, this is a good book to bet this teaser at. Teaser prices matter, you know, so you should always look and see what kind of price you're getting. And DraftKings does have the best prices on teasers, but that's also why they're quick to limit you on them as well. I'm a little annoyed about it because I haven't actually won at teasers with them this season, but I guess they sense that the tide might be turning on that, and they limited me, so I'm bummed about that.
They just know. They just know when Mr. Dave Hill comes calling to protect themselves. They have to gird their loins.
They do, man. They limited me to a penny on college football parlays.
Oh, my God.
A penny. I took a screenshot and sent it to people. I was like, can you believe this? This is a company that just yesterday had an earnings call where they're publicly traded. They're worth, you know, billions of dollars, and they won't let me bet a penny on a college football round robin parlay. It's ridiculous.
That's tremendous.
Scared money don't win. I don't know if they know that or not.
That's,
I want to get
amazing.
On their earnings call and tell them what we say at the racetrack. Scared money don't win.
You warned people about this, and you know that they were going to clamp down and get limited, and everybody was so excited. Well, sports betting,
My story went to the printer today.
Nice.
So if you see in the next couple of weeks, if you see the Timothy Chalamet issue of Rolling Stone out in the newsstand, pick it up. It's got a really long story by me about the sports betting industry. I talk about this limiting stuff in depth, not just about my own experience, but plenty of other people who have had to deal with it. Check it out. People should read it and see what they think. And just be buyer beware when you're betting with these sports books. Just know that, like, if you show any ability to win, they're gonna cut you off. It ain't like the racetrack.
Exactly. Well, I'm only upset. I'm only upset, Dave, that you're not on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
They want a sell copy.
So Timothy Chalamet gets it. Well, that's Dr. Hook in the background for anybody waiting to hear cover of the Rolling Stone. Dave Hill, everybody. Dave, best of luck this weekend.
Same to y'all.
I appreciate it. It's so great. I think Hammer is standing by, and he can appreciate Dr. Hook and cover of the Rolling Stone.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Yes, I can appreciate that. Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. Big hit, because that back when that was it, you made if you made the Rolling cover the Rolling Stone, you were now, you stepped into another realm in rock and roll. You were big, right?
Now, and this piece by Dave, I mean, he's worked on it all calendar year. He's traveled all over the country. He attended multiple, you know, gambling conferences. And Costa Rica, he went to late in the game here, and Vegas several times. It's going to be an important piece. We had him on, Seth and I had him on Loose on the Lead, and it was fascinating. And there's going to be, I imagine there's going to be some industry reaction to Dave's piece, because he basically said that the, you know, the various, you know, sports wagering purveyors, they're ready to move on already. They don't see it as a you know, as a win and as a profit. They're moving on to online casinos. That's their next next hill to climb. But they're not hitting their marks, and it's going to be a very interesting. I'm very anxious to see how people react to Dave's piece.
When does that due out?
Shortly, this coming issue with Timothy Chalamet on the cover, and of course, looking forward to seeing the Bob Dylan biopic with Chalamet.
That's coming out on Christmas Day.
Looks great.
Movie theaters only.
Good. Good. Something to look forward to.
We'll probably make. You used to do that when I lived up in the Bay Area. On Christmas Day, we would go to a movie, and so I haven't done that in 30 years. So it might be changing that again. I headed to the movie theater on Christmas Day to go see that Bob Dylan piece. But anyway, we're rolling like a Rolling Stone for last week. It was a good week with you doing. Doing a few shows in the frigid confines of the balcony above the paddock at Del Mar. Incredibly thinking how, you know, we're up there freezing as the sun is hitting every piece of land except where we were in the morning. But anyways, those were fun, and the afternoons were even better. So good few days down there. Good, you know, the Breeders' Cup is always fun down there, and we sometimes, you know, you don't always bet what you talk about, and for once I did, and it worked out well. I had a good week, and was around a lot of people that seemed to do very well. One thing I wanted to mention, handicapping wise, which I've gotten in the habit of doing, and it's helped out, like. Take a minute now.
Yep.
Review your Breeders' Cup bets and selections and how you went about it, and make some notes on maybe some mistakes that you made, that maybe you should have played the pick three instead of the pick four, maybe you should have bet win, but just some money management, some wagering ideas, you know, think about the hype, should you believe the hype, but take the notes now, tuck them away. And I've done that over the years, and I've been able to correct a few, you know, betting mistakes or betting patterns that maybe I was doing wrong. That you know, I've learned to bet win more because of it. I'll take a step back, which I did this time. So do while it's fresh in your mind, and just tuck it away. And then when I do that for the Derby day as well, because you get influenced by certain people, and that's another thing. Write down the people that you know, are comfortable with listening to. And I mean, we had 20, 30 people on, and obviously you can't follow all of them, but some you like better than others, and, you know, just make some notes. That's my handicapping tip for the day.
Well, and it was notable. I mean, everybody that's been through as we've reviewed things, David Aragona this morning, Nick will be on in about 10 minutes, as well. And, the multis, I mean, there were a couple of spots in the sequence. Like, for instance, Straight No Chaser. I mean, personally, Straight No Chaser stopped me. So did the Classic. And they were, you know, they were positioned in that regard. They were badly positioned. And I didn't have Starlust on any ticket. So those three races of the nine, the other six, we had various versions of success. And so, you know, if race 5, 8, and 10 are stopping multi-race wagers, you know, you're a chicken in a pot. I've said for years, we've said to people, if you're a pick five or four better, bet pick threes. If you're a pick three better, bet doubles, and just, you know, heavy up your investment. You know, if you instead of plugging that money into the pick four, pick five, pick three, you know, bet some $20 doubles and hammer it.
Exactly. And that's kind of my point is, you know, say, you know, I only ended up betting one pick five this year instead of, you know, 3 years ago, I'd have probably bet all of them. And I didn't hit that one. I did hit a couple pick fours. But my thing, I really enjoy the rolling pick threes because you can adjust along the way. If you're live, you can cover and,
yes,
you know, use a few win bets.
Use it as a hedge.
There's always that one race. That the 11th race, more than looks, even though I had that horse in a couple combinations, I mean, I need it. If Porta Fortuna wins, I mean, I'm calling you from another. I'm from an island somewhere. I would have nailed that pick four like a lot with Moira in there, and I really liked, you know, Straight No Chaser, and then, you know, the final I was in. But it wasn't even close. So it was, you know, when you're not close, it's like, okay, I was off, but still, I thought it was a pretty good, you know, it was kind of neat this year. We had a lot of, new names, not necessarily new names, to racing, but new names for Breeders' Cup.
Right.
And some stories, you know, you had, you know, Sappy Joseph won. And then of course, you know, Drayton Van Dyke was on, and you had him on, either Monday or Tuesday. I forget
Monday.
What day, but. Monday, and that was just super to hear him and kind of just being able to kind of get a few things off his chest, and it's great to have him back. You know, Kenny McPeak winning it first, and Kevin Attar, Dan Blacker, and of course, Cherie DeVoe, who, you know what, going into the Breeders' Cup, she's going to win one. Yeah, and, you know, it's just a feel. She's just been on a roll and just does such a great job and is so upbeat. I was, you know, happy to see that, too, so... It was down at Del Mar again. It's if you want to call it quaint, if that's a word, that was kind of it. The crowds were, it was full, but it wasn't jammed. And, you know, I was on a rare solo run, you know, usually have a crew and, you know, of course, and know a lot of people running around, and I had a blast. The best part was at night. I didn't have to go out if I didn't want to. So I was home early. A couple of nights and, you know, just a few forays to the hotel bar, but, it was a lot fresher in the mornings. And so I think that might've helped a little bit down the road. I gotta tell you, but, you know, I encourage some, you know, we always talk about the Del Mar situation in the East and, you know, Saratoga versus Del Mar, but the Breeders' Cup gives you an opportunity to check it out. And although it's not the summertime, you still get the same vibe, around.
Very much.
Can I give a public service announcement here? And it's good for Sirius Radio. For anybody that's listening on Sirius Radio, your subscription is going to run out eventually. And if you keep tabs on it, when it runs out, they raise the price on you. It's just the way it goes. But they want you to call. So if that happens, please call in, talk to a person, and they will lower it back down. Don't email. Don't try to do it online. Call and talk to a person. I mean, I put a sticky on my note, my calendar every year. 12 months. call Sirius, because it'll go from, you know, whatever it is, like $12 a month to 30, and then like you sometimes it'll be like three cycles go by and you go, wait a minute, and you call them and they go, oh yes, okay, yes, we'll bring it back down, sir. Thank you very much. So That's for all the bunch of listeners out there. Just do that. For some reason, they want you to call, and you know, they kind of get you. Speaking of that, Amit, when you're solo, you seem to talk to more people. I had the chance to meet some new people here. I'm going to give them a shout out, Michael and Nancy, who listen all the time. I got to meet up in a suite. They're in the music business, so I'm not going to give out their last name, but you probably know them. But constant listeners, and you know, they were happy to meet me. I was thrilled to meet them, and we had a good, you know, long conversation.
Nice.
And what's fun is they said we enjoy, you know, your talks with about travel and concerts and music and obviously the racing, and they listen every week, so I'm sure they're listening now. So thanks for listening, and as you did, you know, run into a lot of people that do listen to the show and during the week and all the time, and so it's kind of neat, and they appreciate, you know, seeing you on site and everything. So it was just a really kind of a cool weekend for me. I've taken this week after the Breeders' Cup off mentally, racing wise. I kind of just because we start up into the, you know, you have to, you got to take something, but I've always done that because now we got meetings and Arizona's coming up and you know, Greatest Stakes Committee stuff, so it's going to be a lot. We just don't take enough breaks. So this is my mental break this week to, you know, reflect back and see what we can maybe try and improve on.
I don't blame you. It seems like almost everybody we've talked to this week, away from, you know, trainers and the like, are all going to assemble at Arizona. Should be... And in fact, you know, right at the end of the day, Saturday, Rick, I had to go charge the phone a little bit for the last couple of races, and Robert Hartman was in with Bill Nader, and talked to Robert a little bit about the session at Arizona. So, looking forward to getting back.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's back. You know, it was a couple of years, about 10 years ago. It was kind of waning a little bit, but they're talking about the Arizona Symposium in December, but it's back full blast. And once again, this is a public, anybody can go. Go on, just Google University of Arizona Racing Symposium, and you can get your little badge there and show up and go to the sessions and listen to the people that you hear about on the show. I mean, I think we talked to Bob earlier this week, Baffert, and him,
yep.
he and Todd Pletcher are going to sit down and answer whatever questions are thrown at them, and you know, you'll get some few insights from them that maybe they won't say other places. And it's a great place to meet and greet a lot of people in the industry. And like I said, if you're out there and you're a fan and you want to kind of, you know, sit next to someone in a restaurant and it's in the business, that's the place to go. It's really on the comeback. And I got to say, I'm a little upset at Callie. I will, you know, check in later. I was listening as she was on, and she's passing on It's Hammer Time. Did I hear that?
Well, because I think we're not sure that Capuano's actually running him.
Oh, okay.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's all right.
He ran Saturday.
Very upset that I saw that, but I forgot that he was in, and then I heard her, and I looked it up real quick, and I'll speak to her on the side about that. But anyway, I know you got to get to Nick, but great follow up. Always, you know, always fun to do the shows down there, and we'll look forward to kicking it off again. I mean, to me, this is when the new year starts. So. Let's rock and get going, and congratulations to all the winners, and let's get ready for next year.
100%. Hammer, thanks for everything. It was great. It was a great week.
It was a great week. So carry on, everybody. See you at the races, or we'll see you at Arizona.
Exactly. Both. Rick Hammerly, everybody. Away they go. And going to close it out. We got about Got about 12 minutes to spend with Nick Tamaro, and anxious for Nick's take. And I'm trying to think. I did not some years. I have to go look at my. At my text chain with Nick, because no, I think, you know what, we did discuss it. Now that I think about it, it must have been on Sunday when I was traveling, actually. Yeah, we were talking. Oh, you know what, he and I were going back and forth about the contest, and I have not yet seen, actually, if you missed Wednesday's show, I've already heard from three or four people who really enjoyed Stephen Wells. And if you want to go online and see the bar, it's really quite nice. It's pretty cool. It's a tiny little town. It's crazy small town, Fordville, North Dakota. And I mean, the bar looks like it's, you know, one of the major fixtures in Fordville. But I loved you know, the way he approached it. I mean, everything he did for the 2 days was designed to get to more than looks, and there's some real valuable insight. So anyway, Nick and I were kind of going back and forth about the contest, and so. That was the lion's share of our discussion. All right, Brian's trying to raise him. Nick said that he thought the 10:45, which is his time now, would be ideal. All right, keep. Well, then we're in trouble, because that I did not make for an alternate arrangement. All right. Well, then let me vamp a little bit until we get him. And I did get a very funny Gary Young text that sent me a text, and I thought it would, you know, I thought it might be a follow up to the weekend. And of course, a lot of people appreciated Gary's full Serrano push. Because they did not see him in that spot. And I suppose it was just because the dirt mile was so deep. Gary, so I just got this from the thing from Gary, and it's actually about something. It's about a CHRB suspension that is quite, I'm sure it'll make the rounds. They weren't happy with somebody's the picture on his license. something new to get regulators, you know, into a twist. I won't say anything else. Something tells me that this will make the rounds. All right, and I just checked with Nick to see if he's going to be able to join us or not. In the meantime, that's all stuff that we can wait till next week. No reason to no reason. All right. Well, this doesn't look good, because I think Nick, Yeah, he hasn't responded to Brian, and I even texted him as well. All right, then I'll tell you what we are. Since I mentioned Gary Young, let me see if I can't raise the one and only Super G to finish up. And here he is. I've got like a 5-minute window here, Gary, and I did promise you earlier in the week that I would get you on to recap a little. But first and foremost, a lot of people heard you loud and clear on Full Serrano, and they ended their Breeders' Cup successfully. So thank you.
Well, kind of a throwback to the old days when a horse would work like that in a race would be so loaded where you could get the price on that horse. I mean, it was a tough field, but I mean, you know, it was. I liked Straight No Chaser, and I love Full Serrano, and I hope the people did okay. I mean, Full Serrano was, if his workouts were just something that if you let that horse win and pay $28 and you didn't bet on him, then you probably should never come out in the morning again. That was, his workouts were that good. And, you know, it was a good way to end the weekend.
Exactly. And, you know, that was a fun, it actually was a fun nightcap, given the size of that field and how many horses, you know, appeared to be really eligible for success. I mean, I keyed off of post time and I ended up using Full Serrano because of you and because of Andy Harrington raved about him, Toby Terrell. I mean, when the three of you all have positive things to say, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to exclude a horse.
Unfortunately, in today's world, if all three of us like a horse in California, it's usually an effort, and the horse has got a blinking light in between his eyes, and the second number is a lot bigger than the first number. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's, like I said, that was kind of nice to get 13-1 on that horse, and, you know, you could, the pools were so big, you could bet whatever you wanted, and you weren't going to move the board, which is nice.
Exactly. Well, how about some other observations the rest of the weekend?
You know, it was a good weekend of racing. I mean, there was, as usual on the Del Mar Turf course, there's one winner and about five horses think they should have won. I think the beat the Godolphin Philly took in the Philly and Mare Turf, that one, if you watch the tape on that race, that horse definitely should have won, but that can so often happen in turf racing where one horse wins and five horse thinks they should have won. But her trip was pretty tough not to say that she wasn't the best horse, but sometimes the best horse doesn't win, especially in turf racing.
Cinderella's Dream.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Cinderella Dream had a night. I mean, it was not a Cinderella trip. Let's just put it that way.
What, Gary? What about the classic? How did you end up betting it? And what'd you think?
You know, I didn't really bet the race. I mean, I texted Flaviana. I said, you know, when they came in front of the stands the first time, I could actually see the smile on his face because it was the first time in, you know, that Sierra Leone was getting a pace to really run at, you know. I mean, yes, there was a pace in the Derby, as there always is, but I mean, no one could have foreseen 44 and change coming for the half in that race. And when they hung the half mile time, it was like, okay, if they had in race wagering at that particular point in time, you'd have taken a shot on him. And, you know, coming around the turn, he was by far traveling the best. I mean, everyone else was being shoved either a little or a lot, and Mr. Pratt was still just sitting on the horse. And at that particular point in time, it looked like school was out. You cannot take away from Fierceness Race. I mean, he was up on that pace, and he gave it everything he had. I mean, he was, you know, he ran a tremendous race, and now I guess it'll be really interesting to see who takes home the jewelry in the 3-year-old division, you know.
100%. And then, of course, the horse of the year argument. It feels like everybody's going to just turn toward Torpedo Anna. Not, I don't want to say by default, but you know, she's worthy.
You know, she's definitely got the one. If she got up and beat Pearson in the Travers, her case would be a lot better. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you know, still, I mean, she's a terrific filly. I mean, you know, she's not the biggest filly. She's very well balanced, and you know, you got to give the tip of the hat to McPeak to find her for that kind of money. I mean, you know, you know, she was boss the entire way that day. I mean, you know, I think I speak for a lot of people. You know, there's some trepidation as to whether, you know, because her race at Parks wasn't as jaw-dropping as some of her others, you had to wonder. But she looked great in the paddock. She looked great in the warm-up. And, you know, very early on in that race, in the filly mare, in the staff, it, you could tell that, you know, she probably wasn't going to lose. You know.
Gary, just got about 30 seconds. The boys race on Friday, and I was shocked to get 17-1 on Citizen Bowl.
You know, I mean, it's just amazing. It was nice to see California win three Breeders' Cup races. I mean, how was that? How were you? You know, I mean, yes. Once, you know, he was the most likely horse at Bathurst to win, but I mean, you know, if you knew that the Brendan's horse was going to go to his nose coming out of the gate, you knew that, you know, I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't make heads or tails of Chad Brown's horse. You know, I mean, he's hung a little wide, but Chancellor McPatrick, but he was hung a little wide, but he was empty early on. I mean, nothing, you know. I mean, stretch running sprinters stretching out are often not a good bet, but I thought he would at least do something. But that was one of the more disappointing races of the weekend. One race doesn't make a career, but you know, it's just, you know, at least Brendan's horse had an excuse. You know, obviously,
yeah.
I mean, Champion Patrick didn't really have an excuse.
No. Well, Brian, Gary, I appreciate it. Well done. We'll see you next month out there.
Okay, I got another way.
Thanks. Gary Young, everybody. Thanks to David Aragona and Callie and James Scully, Dave Hill, Hammer, and Gary. Good luck this weekend. Talk to you Monday.